Kaya Talk on Kaya 959, on the street, on the air.
Coming up now, we are talking to Margaret Kimani. And Margaret Kimani is an author, a businesswoman, she's a banker, transformational leader, and a philanthropist. A very good evening to you, Margaret. Thanks so much for your time.
Thank you. Good evening, and thanks for having me.
Margaret, you were born in Kenya, but you spent a lot of time in the United States. You're an investment banker, and I think a lot of your experience comes from there. You have over 20 years of international banking experience. What really stands out for me is that you successfully developed, at the time you were working for Chase Bank, you developed their diaspora banking from scratch and grew it for a few years. That's so important, especially for the continent. What was that like?
Yeah, good question. It was, first of all, remember I had just landed from the States. I was coming back home. And I was actually approached by the former MD of the bank to start their diaspora department. And it was quite exciting for me because, as you know, I lived abroad and I'd seen all the challenges we had, especially us Kenyans living abroad, all the challenges, we face trying to remit money, trying to invest back home, trying to support families back home. And so for me, I was very excited. Of course, it was challenging because I needed to go to markets like Australia, UAE. I needed to make sure that we are including all the Kenyans living abroad, not just North America. And yes, it was exciting and challenging at the same time. But at the end of the day, when I saw it, remember starting something from scratch is a lot of, unexpected, or there are things you actually... unexpected changes that happen, and you realize there's a lot of opportunities out there. So for me, to be able to actually bank one Kenyan at a time, one diasporan Kenyan at a time, bring on board strategic partners, including bringing on board money transfer companies who had never been in Kenya, who had never actually invested in Kenya. It was very exciting because I got to also work with very supportive Ministry of Foreign Affairs at the time. You know, we had very visionary leaders in that department. So I was able to work with all stakeholders, and it was quite exciting.
I know, but you say, lots of challenges. I mean, especially when you look at the transformational aspect and having to change mindsets and change views and getting acceptance. Yeah. What was that like in actually, pushing forward your agenda, if I would call it, and getting them to accept that?
A very good question. Let me even shock you further. So when I remember, the very first thing was I needed to come up with a product, right? Mm-hmm. So even internally within the organization, you could see a lot of resistance. I mean, I'll tell you a very simple example. As something as small as a brochure, when you're creating a product, that time, luckily, we did not have coronavirus. So I needed to come up with the product itself, product development, strategic plans and whatnot. And you could see already a lot of resistance because, remember, the people I was dealing with at the time, people who have lived in Kenya, had never left the country. Mm. And I think sometimes when you bring some crazy ideas, like one of the projects, one of the initiatives I took was partnering with the money transfer companies because it's a no-brainer. These Kenyans remit money from abroad. So when you bring certain ideas, and remember, to me, to the bank, I was more like an outsider. And a lot of times I would see that I'm bringing very fresh ideas, very crazy ideas, if you can call them. And for some people, they never saw it. Like, these things will never work. This chick is too aggressive. This chick is very ambitious. Mm. And eventually, guess what happened? I'm very happy to mention her name. The current Cabinet Secretary of Sports, was at the time the Cabinet Secretary. She was the Minister for Foreign Affairs. Her name is Dr. Amina Mohammed.
Yes.
I think some of you might know her. Mm-hmm. I'm a big fan of her. Mm-hmm. And she happened to be the one. Now, remember, I'm working for that, at the time I was working for a private bank, right?
Yeah.
Not a publicly listed, not one of the, the Kenyan banks owned here. So I was working for a private bank. And for me to even have had a chance to work with her as a private company, it spoke volumes. And guess what? Eventually, I ended up sitting in her board, in her steering committee. We were able to do a lot. And guess what? Anytime Amina Mohammed, at the time, anytime she was doing any foreign, any investment project, any investment conferences, anything that would come out there, she would always consult with me.
Yeah.
And so we ended up, actually, the bank, Chase Bank, ended up actually getting actually a voice, you know, in the Ministry of Foreign Affairs. I was heavily involved even in terms of diaspora policy. Can you imagine, as a bank, being able to help Kenyans abroad get involved with the diaspora policy, because there was no policy at the time. So we were also able to come up with a remittance policy. You know, before, the Central Bank of Kenya was not really tracking the remittance. They didn't have the statistics. And there are many things that ended up. So even the naysayers, you know, the people who thought this chick is too aggressive, you know, this chick is bringing some crazy ideas, you know. Remittance companies, I'll give you one of the companies we partnered with right now has ventured in so many other countries here in Kenya. Western Union was another. I remember one time the former CBK governor, we actually went and supported an event for the Rugby 7 in Las Vegas.
Yeah.
And guess who came with us? The Western Union, you know. The Western Union, the money transfer companies of the world. So other than doing banking, we were able to actually put Kenya on the map. I don't know if you track a bit of Kenya, what happens. At that time, when I was in diaspora banking, I think every other bank was starting now to, start their diaspora desk. Which never existed. I think only one or two banks had it, and a lot of banks wanted to poach me, of course, you know, yeah. And it was quite interesting. And you know, now the ideas that were looking crazy initially, people started coming to me, even my fellow colleagues, other heads of departments, saying, oh, how can I assist you? And remember, initially, these were the same people who could not even support you print a brochure. You know, they thought, oh, the images, they don't look. And I'm like, no, listen, this is what Kenyans want. When I'm a Kenyan living in Dubai, when I see certain images, they trick back. You know, they're very sentimental. You know, I miss home. You know, as a Kenyan living abroad, I miss home. There are certain images that when I see them, I automatically want to go back home or invest back home or engage. And also information sharing was another. So we created forums and initiatives where we would have, representatives abroad. I'd call them agents now, but these were our voice. I can't even tell you how many tours we've done, from London to Khartoum. I remember, so I became friends with all the ambassadors, pretty much almost all the ambassadors. And let me tell you, there's nothing as challenging as you being able, you know, a nobody. Remember, all my life, for 10 years I was in Wall Street. So really, I was not dealing with individuals. I was dealing with huge investment funds, the Goldman Sachs, the Deutsche Banks of the world. So for me to have been able to create these strategic alliances with the ambassadors in different countries, you know, Kenyan ambassadors in different countries, it was quite humbling, you know?
Yeah.
And as a bank, we would actually, we got a lot of goodwill. You know, from Dubai, Khartoum, I remember the ambassadors, every time they needed to do investments, they would just call upon us. And at some point, remember, I was a one-man show. I was a one-person department. It's funny, when I look back, so I would go to London for a tour where I'm talking to Kenyans, we are partnering with AMREF. We would partner even with the organizations that actually support, you know, initiatives that are run by Kenyans, just to make sure that we're engaging face-to-face with Kenyans. And like I said, this was way before Corona, you know?
But it also, you know, it took you a long time. How did you overcome those challenges in getting them to actually listen? You talk about Amina Mohammed. I mean, you know, it took a long time before she could actually find a place. I mean, she's in the ministry. She's in the Kenyan ministry, in the Kenyan government now. But I mean, if you don't have other women lifting you up, I mean, that's still a challenge. And I mean, the financial services industry, especially internationally, is still very male dominated. How do you overcome kind of challenges? And I mean, you didn't start now. You started a long time ago. I mean, we are seeing transformation, albeit very slowly.
Very, very, very valid point, and it's true. And I'll tell you, I think for me, there's something so special in me, and I'm not able to tell you exactly, but a lot of people have told me I'm quite driven. Yeah, I'm one of those go-getters. In fact,
I'm thinking you weren't taking no for an answer.
Yeah, exactly. In fact, one of the articles that the diasporians would write, I know the former bank, Chase Bank, wrote an article about me, and they said something to the tune of, I'm very stubborn in what I believe in, and I'm very aggressive. I don't know if it came from my hard upbringing. When I believe in something, and because I'm a transformer, when I believe in something, I know, of course, it's very easy to give up, but I think God has given me a special gift in me that, yes, it's sometimes you want to throw the towel, of course. But when I believe in something, when I start something, I always bring it to a conclusion. I think that helped me overcome. I'll give you an example. The first time when Amina Mohammed called us, because when we were coming up with the diaspora policy, there was a lot of arguments, I can tell you for free. And especially the government officials in Kenya wondering, it's an issue. Why are you even bringing it up? And for us, we were saying, Kenyans would not invest back home if they are not voting, if they do not have, for example, dual citizenship, especially for North America, because majority of Kenyans at the time, even now, majority of Kenyans live in U.S. and Canada. So, for some of the officials there, and I remember at the time, right now, our current vice president, I remember one time when they called us to our physical meeting here in Nairobi in the Intercontinental. And I remember pulling, Amina was, they were coming in to our meeting, and I just imagine, I didn't even know that he has bodyguards. I mean, for me, I don't know protocols. For some reason, I don't know. I am so allergic to protocols. You know, I almost got into an argument with the vice president. It's called, I think you probably know the name, but because at the time they were working very closely with Amina Mohammed. And I look at that photo even until today, I was like, wait a minute, because I was trying to explain to him why this is so important. Because already we had had so many meetings back and forth, and we felt like there was a bit of too much resistance, and this thing needs to move. And, we had certain timelines of for when and when and when and when the bill needs to be passed. Anyway, long story short, it got passed. So you asked the question of having other women, in the financial industry, for sure. It's for sure. There are very few women in leadership, and especially you can be, and this is something I wrote about last year in my book. You see, you can be a manager, you can be a leader, but I always, the saddest thing for me, the thing that makes me actually very sad is that, if you're a leader, the reason God has given you a leadership position is to transform things that are not working. And for me, I think that is the other thing that drives me. So in certain areas where you find that there are not so many women, in those positions, it's actually my job to make sure that I'm pulling other women up and also motivating and motivating, even if it's indirectly.
I mean, mentorship is so key. I mean, you currently head the Women and Youth Banking Unit at SBM Bank. And the mandate really is to educate, empower young women, and also to push diversity and inclusion.
Yes.
So, I mean, mentorship just plays such a critical role. Are you able to do that more now that you are heading up the segment?
Yes, absolutely. And not just in the bank. I actually lost track of how many people I mentor at any given time.
Yeah.
Because you see what happens, that I have so many people who are not reporting to me within the bank, but people who actually indirectly are mentoring. And my mentorship is not usually the traditional way. I mentor in a very crazy way. I mentor by leading. I lead by my actions. Yeah. So I know, I'll give you an example. Next to my office, we have the contact center where there are many girls, very young girls, straight from college, probably this is their first job, and men as well. So I'm mentoring so many people. I lost count. And also outside of my work, I do have, I think I mentioned one of the reasons why I came back home is that I lost my mother. My mom passed on when I was doing my second degree, and I know I was really looking forward for her coming home. So what I did is that I adopted, somehow God, by God's grace, I was able to adopt her legacy of impacting lives. And I've been mentoring people. I have people from Mauritius, from, I have young girls and boys in Harvard. I can't even start telling you, I can count. And locally, I mentor very humble schools. Humble, by humble, I mean very neglected, very needy schools, living below $1 a day. And I continue mentoring these young boys and girls, you know, because I believe that I'm a product of education. I don't know if you might not know, but my parents did not even reach class 3, you know, the lower grade, the lowest grade. So I'm actually an excellent product of education. So I believe that education changes the way you think. Even if you, you know, for people who might not make it to very high degrees and high you know, higher learning, institutions of higher learning, when you're educated, there's a certain level of thinking that actually you change your thinking, you change your view, worldview. And I think education is a very powerful tool. So anyway, I continue to mentor. I actually serve in the Presidential DigiTalent. We do have, our Ministry of ICT has a certain agenda to mentor ICT students. These are the ones who are innovating a lot of our solutions that are digital for the, you know, government service delivery. And I continue to mentor, whether within the organization, in my estate. This is my calling. Actually, I remember the last time I visited South Africa, because my flight had been so delayed and there's a school that actually wanted to see me. I remember the kids being brought to the airport, and my tears were just flowing down. And I could see the security guards. They were almost wondering, like, who does that? So the school teachers were so kind. They came from Soweto. So they happened to be within the vicinity. So they were brought, and I had to meet them because I was catching a flight and I just connected from Pretoria. So really, for me, even when I go different countries, God always connect me to people that I'm able to, within that vicinity, I'm able to mentor. And I think the word has been going out. So I find myself mentoring even in different places and getting those opportunities to mentor. Mm. And for me, I don't take it for granted, because I can tell you for free, when I left Kenya, State Street Bank, I will forever talk about it. I'll forever be grateful, because State Street Bank, the same way we are doing in SBM, so they assigned me a mentor. Remember, they didn't have to. I didn't even know what mentorship was.
Yeah.
I'd never come across that word. Can you imagine how ridiculous it sounds now? And that's how I was very lucky. This lady was very, very, very tough. And she told me straight to the point. I actually wrote in the book, straight to the point. The first day I met her, she was like, listen, I'm not here to befriend you. I'm not here to, you know, not the way I'm saying, but in good English. She said, you look, I will not chase you around. Whatever we agreed to do, I expect you to follow up. And, you know, the list goes on and on and on.
Life
will never be the same again.
Yeah, no, you know, I sometimes all it takes is just one person to hold your hand and guide you and help you along.
Yes.
And you know, it just continues like that. It was such a pleasure talking to you, Margaret. Thank you so much for your time this evening. And I hope you continue with this mentorship, because you're doing such great work out there. Of course, Margaret Kimani is also an author, Unleash the Leadership Giant in You. Look out for it. Very interesting conversation. Thank you so much for your time.
Kaya Talk, Monday to Thursday, 7 to 9 p.m. on Kaya 959, on the street, on the air.